Shabbat Shalom. Hey, Shabbat Shalom to our brethren with us who will be watching this with us today around the world. I want to give a message today. I haven't given a message a long time on the topic of Babylon. I wanted to talk about it from a little bit different aspect. I know most of the time starting out giving all the different things, who Babylon is and all the characteristics, I might just point to that as we're hitting them. But I think it's pretty evident when you're looking at who end time Babylon is. We have many messages on that. We have a whole Bible study on it. So the message really isn't to prove that America is end time Babylon. I think that stands on its own. But it's really to show some of the things that are coming there and how it's coming. So the message is called Isaiah, Babylon in the End Time. And I want to start in the book of Isaiah, because we're really living in a really, really serious time. And the last 10 or 15 years have, flown by like you can't imagine. And now, many of the things I remember even back in the 1990s, you know, when I first learned about Babylon and I was teaching about Babylon. And like I said, the scripture is pretty clear. And sometimes when you look at the world around us and then you read the scripture, it's hard to figure out how something can happen. Just like America going to war with Egypt 15 years ago, you wonder, how could this happen? Egypt is one of the tightest allies of America. But now, wow, you could really see how it's happening with America backing the Muslim Brotherhood, who has been outlawed by Egypt. And depending on how that situation goes. And really, I don't think anybody could say that today, you know, from 10 years ago, it's not a much different world. It was a scary world 10 years ago when George Bush was going into Iraq. And nobody knew the outcome. But the outcome was determined pretty easily. And even when you look at Babylon, as far as the financial capital of the world, and Babylon falling, meaningly the economic system falling, 10 or 15 years ago, the only way you can really figure America going down was militarily. And even then, it was only in guessing. Because America today, as they did 10, 15 years ago, had the strongest military in the world. Today, maybe not so much. They are vulnerable in ways that they weren't 10 or 15 years ago. But economically, 10 or 15 years ago, how could you ever picture America to fall? But if you look at just at the time George Bush became president in the year 2000, not that long ago, you know, 14 short years ago, that they were already saying, you know, at that point, America's debt was getting close to $2 trillion. And they were nervous. $2 trillion, if this keeps going somewhere down the line, you know, what's going to happen? We're not going to be able to pay the debt. We're not going to be able to pay the interest. And then all of a sudden, when George Bush left office in 2008, that debt went from $2 trillion to something like $7 trillion. It was just unbelievable how far it went up. And at that time, Barack Obama, who was running for president, he said, this is un-American. He said, this is traitorous, basically what he said, that President Bush could run up a debt that could be $6 to $7 trillion. And you know, something has to be changed. And yet in the last 5 years since President Obama has got in, the debt has gone from that $6 or $7 trillion now up to $17 trillion, $17.5 trillion, and going up every minute, like $1 million or something. And by the time President Obama would leave office, if we're around in 2016, it'll be more than $20 trillion. So they're already now more than 100%. They're like 108% of their GDP. So now economically, we could really see. And it may start even this year, 2014. You know, economically, you know, I'm not an economic prophet. I did have my major in college in macroeconomics. I can clearly see what's coming. I can tell you 100%, it's irreversible. And I'm not the only one saying it. Top economists in the world, even in America, are saying the same thing. That it just, there's no way the track that they're on is really reversible. When it will come, like I said, who knows? Who knows? I didn't predict this 10 or 15 years ago. I'm not predicting today. But I will say today, like Paul said, you know, that the day of our salvation is much closer than the day when we first believed. And the day of Babylon's fall is clearly much closer than the day we believe this, we're going to see from this message. So I'm going to start in Isaiah 13. Because really it's not a message of fear or a message of condemnation. It's really a message to wake up the people, to share what's going on in world events, and to help us get a closer relationship with our Heavenly Father, which all of our purpose should be. It says, the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amos saw, and we'll see from the chapter, this is not something about ancient Babylon, but it clearly is about end time Babylon, as we'll see the day of Yahweh, which is something that hasn't happened yet. He says, lift up a banner on a bare mountain. Whenever you see that term, lift up a banner, it's messianic. There's a banner for every tribe. It's talking about the Messiah coming back and uniting all the tribes together. Lift up a banner on a bare mountain. Make the voice rise to them. Wave the hand that they may enter the gates of nobles. I have commanded my holy ones. I have also called my warriors for my anger, those who rejoice in my majesty. The noise of a multitude in the mountains of a great people, the noise of a turmoil of the kingdoms, of nations gathered together. Yahweh of hosts is calling up an army for battle. They come from a distant land and from the ends of the heavens. Yahweh in the weapons of his wrath to destroy all the land. Howl, for the day of Yahweh is at hand. It comes as a destruction from the Almighty. So clearly end time. This is the day of Yahweh. This is when Yahweh's wrath is coming not only on the land of Israel and not only on Babylon. This is where it starts. It's a chain reaction. But on all the world. You know, Isaiah 24 talks about why. Because they've broken the everlasting covenant. And the world is getting to the point where abortion after abortion and pushing all their homosexual agenda and all the other evils that the world is bringing, that Yahweh's saying, enough. Enough, I'm intervening. He says, on account of this, all hands shall droop and every heart of man shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pains and sorrows shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain like one giving birth. They shall be amazed, each man to his neighbor. Faces of flame shall be their faces. Behold, the day of Yahweh comes cruel and with wrath and fierce anger to lay the land waste. And he shall destroy its sinners out of it. For the stars of the heaven and their constellations shall not give light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not reflect its light. From Joel 2, the same thing that Yahweh says, before the coming and terrible day of Yahweh, we'll see these signs. They possibly could be partly what we know as eclipses, but also other things that can cause this. But certainly, as we already had one blood moon already last Sukkot, and now we have four more coming at Passover Sukkot. So five, the number of grace, five blood moons coming together. I don't know if I've ever heard of that. Most people are talking about four because they don't keep the biblical calendar, but according to the biblical calendar, it's five. And I will visit evil on the world and their iniquity on the wicked, and I will cause the arrogance of the proud to cease, and I will humble the pride of tyrants. I will make a man more rare than fine gold, even a man more than carvings of Ophir. We know there'll be very few human beings left on the earth after Yahweh's wrath comes. So I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall move out of its place in the wrath of Yahweh of hosts and in the day of his fierce anger. Is this metaphorically, or are we talking about shaking the earth with being hit by a meteor or something? Who knows? And it shall be as a gazelle driven away, and as a sheep no one gathers, each man look to his own people, each one shall flee to his own land. Everyone is found shall be pierced through, yea, everyone who is swept away shall fall by the sword. And their children will be dashed to pieces before their eyes, their houses shall be robbed, and their wives raped. Behold, I stir up the Medes against them, who shall not value silver, and they shall not delight in gold. Isn't it interesting that Babylon, the golden kingdom, Babylon is prophesied, end time Babylon, that they are going to be the richest, most wealthy nation ever in the history of men. That they'll be a country of pleasure seekers, and they are going to fuel the world economy, we know from Revelation 18. And isn't it interesting, just a coincidence, you have 193 countries in the world, and what are the countries prophesied to destroy end time Babylon? The Russians and the Iranians, the Medes and the Persians. How much of a coincidence can that be? When very well now, it's not ancient Iraq and Saddam Hussein, which is long gone, but it's Iran for the last 32, 33 years that have been the nemesis of the United States, and now we're a world power on the verge, if they do not have it already, of nuclear weapons, and also Russia. which is in the last 10, 15 years has gotten extremely powerful and strong militarily and other ways in world events. And bows shall also smash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of their womb. Their eyes shall not spare sons. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the pride of the Chaldeans, shall be as when Elohim overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall not be lived in forever, nor shall it be lived in from generation to generation. Babylon is not just a system. Babylon is not a church. It is a place. It's a place. And no one will live there. And the desert wanderer will not pitch a tent there, nor shall the shepherds make flocks lie down. But the desert creature shall be there, and their houses shall be full of howling creatures, and daughters of ostriches shall dwell there. And he-goats shall skip there, and hyenas shall cry along with his widows, and jackals and palaces of delight. Yea, her time to come is near, and her days shall not be prolonged. And that's the reason I give a message like this, because it's coming to pass. Her days are not going to be prolonged too much longer, and we need to raise up the voice like Isaiah says and cry out, because this time is coming. If you go back to verse 14 that we read already, what does it say? Each man shall look to his own people, each man shall flee to his land. And as we go through this today, we're going to see several different scriptures that talk about, you know, the believers. I've had people tell me before, oh, I don't believe Yahweh would completely destroy America. What about the believers there? And, you know, hey, he gives us seven commands to leave. And we need to have the faith of Abraham. We need to have the faith of a Daniel. And just believe his word for what it says, simply says. And again, I think the problem is sometimes that I've said many times, as ambassadors to Yahweh, we're not Americans, we're not Africans, we're not Filipinos, we're not of any nationality, but our citizenship is in heaven, and all of us are citizens of the kingdom of Yahweh. And yet some of us have been stationed as the ambassador to America, United States of Babylon at this time. Others are stationed as the ambassador to maybe wherever, Philippines, or the ambassador of Uganda, or the ambassador of wherever. But I think the problem is, whenever you're stationed to a place, and like we talked about being an ambassador of Yahweh, once the ambassador becomes connected to the land, and actually becomes a citizen in his mind, he's done as an ambassador. Because the whole point of an ambassador is somebody who is coming with the highest authority from his country, as an emissary to the place where he's going to be an ambassador. So you're not an ambassador to your own country. You're an ambassador, a representative of your government somewhere else. That's the point of being an ambassador. And I think the problem is in Babylon is that too many of the brethren in Babylon don't see themselves. They see themselves as Americans first and citizens of the kingdom of Yahweh second. And it grieves me to my heart when I've had Americans over the years tell me, no matter what, I'd never leave. Or how can it happen? And the problem is, you know, again, Yahweh sets the timing for things and how you get out of there and when. But what I'm saying is, after teaching this for at least 15 years, virtually no one, virtually 1% of the brethren I know in America are even planning or even preparing or even praying about it. And what I hear over and over and over is, I'll never leave. I can't do it. 100 reasons why not. So when this happens, and believe me, it will happen. I don't know if it's going to happen tomorrow or it's going to happen in 10 years from now. But it will happen because the Bible says it, that Yahweh will completely destroy Babylon. There will not be one person left there. When it happens and you're in your distress, don't blame Yahweh. Don't say, how could he allow this to happen? How could he have allowed his people to be destroyed? Because he's giving you every opportunity in the world to warn you beforehand. So whatever you do, don't blame Yahweh. Jeremiah 51. But in the end of days, we're going to see where everybody's allegiance is. And like I always say, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And whatever your allegiance is, you reap what you sow. And if your allegiance is, you know, your life and your possessions and your family and whatever else in Babylon, then there is no kingdom of Yahweh for you. Because the Bible is very clear There's nothing wrong with having family. There's nothing wrong with having a car. There's nothing wrong with having a house. But he who loves father, mother, sister, brother, children, lands more than me is not worthy for me. And when it gets to the point that mentally Babylon and the things that connect you to Babylon are more important than the kingdom of Yahweh, then you got a problem. And I know one thing. My fervent prayer every day of my life is for Yahweh's kingdom to come. For 100 different reasons. For our suffering brethren in Sudan that are being hunted down and attacked and killed, as well as other parts of Africa and the world. For the suffering people out there, the children, the 1.5 million children that die every year just from not having clean water. But also because I can feel that kingdom. Because no matter where you are in the world, whether you're here in Israel, or you're in Europe, or you're in America, it is an evil, wicked, sinister world that's run by evil demonic leaders. It's that simple. Nowhere in the world are there good, righteous, Elohim, divine leaders. Everywhere they're wicked. And what they're doing to people, and that's why my prayer is for that kingdom every day, because I see it. We're at the top of the mountain. The kingdom of Yahweh is right on the other side. And you've got to eat, sleep, and breathe it. And if you're living in Babylon, and you're working every day to Babylon and just going out for whatever, and you're not crying and sighing over the abominations that are done in the earth because it's really not that bad. And you know, there might be 50 years left till the kingdom comes. I'm telling you, you are in stark danger of losing your salvation. And if you don't think so, let me tell you, from somebody that's been around for 32 years in this walk, the vast majority of believers, probably up to 80% or more now, that live in America fall away. More than 80%. And I'm being a little generous with that number because I don't want to discourage people too much. But more than 80% of the people, we've seen them through the years. They come and they go. And a lot of times, some of them that have even come to the school, they leave here with zeal. And yet they go back to Babylon and it sucks the living life out of them. Because it makes slaves of the souls of men. Revelation 18, 13. Very little fruit is being born there. So really, we have to start thinking to ourselves. Forget about the leaving, not leaving. What's inside of your heart? Are you living for Yahweh? Are you living for His kingdom? Is that the first thing on your mind? Or is it some of the things in Babylon? And like I said, none of it is wrong in itself. But Matthew 6:33, seek ye first the kingdom, and all these things will be given to you. And somehow with the Babylonian mindset, it's virtually impossible to seek ye first the kingdom. There are just 100 other things to steal your mind, your time, and your spiritual life away. So Jeremiah 51, verse 6. Flee from the midst of Babylon, yea, each man deliver his soul. So it's not just your possessions, it's not just your life. Each man deliver his soul. Do not be silenced in her iniquity, for it is the time of vengeance of Yahweh. He will give her a just recompense. He will repay her. Babylon was a golden cup in the hand of Yahweh, making all the earth drunk. Remember, gold is something precious. And there was a time that Babylon was the glory of kingdoms, that Yahweh blessed them so that the believers could be there and with freedom produce Bibles and bring this message around the world. But that time is long gone. The nations have drunk of her wine, therefore the nations are mad. And if you don't believe that a little bit of democracy can be an evil thing, look at the Middle East in the last 3 years, you know? You know, the nations are mad. They've drunken of that wine of democracy of Babylon, and now they're mad. And they're going around killing each other and unbelievable things that we know are going on. Suddenly Babylon has fallen and is broken. Wail for her. Take balm for her pain if perhaps she may be healed. We would have healed Babylon, but she's not healed. Forsake her and let us go, each one to his own country, for her judgment reaches to the heavens and is lifted up to the skies. You know, and like I said, the time to think at least, the time to start planning, the time to have a plan of action is not the day that this is happening. Because that's the day that if you have no plan of action, you will be fearing and terrified of what's coming on this nation. The time to think, at least to plan, is now. And unfortunately, I've been saying the same thing for more than 15 years. And the problem is, if people are waiting for me to say, May 4th, And, you know, but I'm not going to do it. I don't have any date. So as long as you say, no, well, it's up to each individual the time you leave, then they say, I'll go back to my life. And like I say, that is where the danger comes. That there's no plan, there's no frame of mind, because you have to leave Babylon mentally before you could leave physically. You need to be wherever you're living in the world, because Babylon has come everywhere now. They've taken this system around the world. And we need to come out of it mentally. We need to come out of this corrupt system of free trade through debt that Babylon has created. Leave her, for her judgment reaches to the heavens and is lifted up to the skies. Revelation 18. Revelation 18. A lot of times we have a scripture here and there telling us of an entity. In Babylon's case, you have whole chapters. As a matter of fact, how important is end time Babylon? There's more said about end time Babylon than any other entity in the Bible except for Jerusalem itself. So it's telling you it is something important. And remember, the book of the Bible is a book about Israel. It's a family album. It only mentions other nations as they come into contact with Israel. And here Babylon is mentioned, except for Jerusalem, more than any other entity. Chapter 18, and after these things I saw another cherub coming down out of heaven, having great authority, and the earth was lifted up from its glory. And he cried with a strong great voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen, it is fallen, and it has become a dwelling place of those possessed by demons, and a home of every foul spirit, and a home of every unclean bird, even the home of every unclean and hateful beast. And I said this, I think, about 2 years ago, maybe a little longer. I said, I believe Babylon is already fallen. I mean, if you look at the place, you know, to me, as an American born there, to have the President of the United States come to Africa in a tiny little country like, what was it, Senegal? Senegal. And try to tell them that they need to start accepting homosexuality as a way of life, and to have this tiny little country, this president, say, well, Mr. President, thank you very much, but go home. Can you imagine how embarrassing that is to have your president, the leader of the free world, come and say this? But look at it. That's what you have there. You have every foul and evil demon, and every home of every unclean bird, and every hateful beast that is representing Babylon in these end times. Because of the wine or the anger of a fornication which all the nations have drunk, even the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth became rich from the power of her trade. Well, I know something. People talk about China, right? That China is this and that. And China is a pretty powerful country militarily, and economically they're getting up there. But China's GDP, which has quadrupled in the last 10 years, is only one quarter of what America is. America's GDP is more than $16 trillion a year. China is just getting up to $4 trillion. And nobody else even comes close. I think the next is Japan. It might be $1.3 trillion. And most countries are in the billions. So come on, when we're looking at who's making the merchants of the earth rich, there's nobody else that can do it. Absolutely nobody, because it's not just what they're selling, it's what they're buying. Europeans aren't buyers. Chinese certainly aren't buyers. Chinese have 1.5 billion people. That's more than 500%, five times the amount of Americans. And buying power is not even 10% of what Americans buy. Americans are the buyers. And that's why the merchants are crying, because nobody's buying their merchandise anymore when Babylon goes down. So let's be real about it. If we're really going to look at Babylon, they're the militarily the world power. Economically, they're the world power. And they're the ones, they're the pleasure seekers. They're the ones bringing the service. That's what Babylon is about. So for people to take some of these other minute points and try to twist it around, you're missing the whole point of what Babylon is. Babylon is not a church. Matter of fact, the word church is not even in the Bible. Not even once. Even in the Brit Hadashah. The word church is a pagan word. It comes from a false deity, Circe, you know, and it comes much later. There are no churches, you know. What you have is congregations. You have people, but you don't have churches. Churches come up in the 3rd century, later on. So certainly Babylon is not a church. but it's a place, it's a dwelling place. And the earth became rich from the power of her trade. And I heard another voice out of heaven saying, leave the land of her, come out of her, my people, literally to leave the land and go abroad, that you may not share in her sins, and that you may not receive of her plagues. Because Babylon is all about money and spending. And the only way Babylon can do it, it certainly isn't coming from President Obama. I was in America one time years back and listening to the radio, and this woman was calling in saying that she wanted all of these free things the government has given out. And the broadcaster said, well, where is America going to pay for this? And she said, it's coming from President Obama. And he said, well, what do you mean? President Obama is going to write out a check? Yeah. President Obama is going to pay for it out of his bank account. And the guy got mad and hung up on the woman. But I mean, this is what the people think. You know, that President Obama has a candy factory, you know, somewhere in his basement. And he's printing out these candy monies and sending them out. And it doesn't work that way. So literally, where is the money coming from? It's coming from every taxpayer. It's coming from every American that's working there, that's making the money. And if you're there and you're part of that system, then you're paying for abortions. And now more than ever, with Obamacare and some of these other things, I'm not talking into the wind. Every single person listening to this knows what I'm saying is absolutely true. That you're being forced to, no matter what your religious beliefs are, even Catholics, that Catholics are being forced to give health care that gives birth control. You know, it's a big thing that's being fought in the courts right now. But come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins and not receive in her plagues. So if you're there, you're giving and you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. You are supporting it. You are supporting the hollow-plated bullets that they're buying for the people and all the other things that they're doing. Because her sins together have reached up to heaven and Yahweh remembered her unjust deeds. Give back to her, so she gave back to you, and double to her, double according to her works. And the cup which she mixed to her double. And we know it's a dual judgment that Babylon gets. First, Babylon falls, and her sovereignty is taken away. You know, and she'll be somewhat a slave state to the New World Order. But later, before Yeshua returns, we know that from the end of Revelation 16, he remembers Babylon the Great, and he wipes it away, and not one person is left there. He says, by what things she glorified herself and luxuriated. So much more give back to her torment and mourning, because she says in her heart, I sit as a queen, I am not a widow, I will not see sorrow. People say to me, well, maybe Saudi Arabia is Babylon. Oh, really? Yeah. Saudi Arabia, people are really living like kings. Maybe the king is, but nobody else is. The Arab world, they have the lowest standard of living anywhere. Matter of fact, the Arabs living in Israel have the highest standard of living of any Arabs anywhere in the world. And their standard isn't even so great. It's much lower than the Jewish standard, which isn't so great on a worldly standard. So certain, come on, let's be real. There is nobody living the standard of luxury in the world than the American standard. He says, because of this, in one day her plagues will come, death and mourning and famine, and she will be consumed with fire by Yahweh Elohim judging her. And the kings of the earth will weep over her and wail over her, those having fornicated and having luxuriated with her when they see the smoke of her burning, standing from afar off because of the fear of her torment, saying, woe, woe to the great city Babylon, the strong city, for in 1 hour your judgment came. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her because no one buys their merchandise anymore. Very clear, only one person it can be. And then again it says, never again will there be trading of merchandise, gold, silver, precious stones, and names 18 things. And like I said, you don't have to believe me. You pick up a Wall Street Journal, only in America can you trade these 18 things, all 18. Maybe you have COMEX exchanges that you can trade gold in London and some other things. But as far as all 18 of these, all of them trade on the commodity exchanges in the United States. And when it falls, there won't be no trading market anymore. So that's why will they be throwing the gold and silver in the streets? Today, you can have a piece of gold. And if Babylon tells you that that's worth $2,000 an ounce, you make a phone call and you give him the gold and he'll give you $2,000. But when Babylon falls, what do you do with that gold piece? When there's no food in the world, try to go to somebody that has a can of food and tell them, I'll give you this gold, give me your food. When there's no food. So the gold and the silver will be worthless at that point once there's no avenue to trade it anymore. So all the things that are there. In verse 14, and the ripe fruits that your soul lusted after have went away from you. And maybe there are other places in America, I mean in the world, I can't say for sure. I know most of the places I've been in, you can only get food that's in season for the most part. In America, it's not like that. You can get any food you want all year long, and it's not expensive. You like strawberries? You don't have to wait for January to March. You can eat them all year long. You like watermelons, whatever it is. You don't have to wait for that, like it says here. And the ripe fruits that your soul lusted after went away, and all things delicious and splendor did perish from you, and you shall obtain them no more. The merchants of these things, the ones enriched from her, will stand from afar because of the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning and saying, woe to the great city, having been clothed in linen and purple and scarlet and having been girdled with gold and precious stone and pearls, showing what? Richness, luxury. From 1 hour such great wealth was desolated. There's, you could add up almost everybody in the world and you almost barely come up to America. Who else has this great wealth? Tell me one nation that has this great wealth that you could say it's talking about them. And every single ship pilot and all company of the ships and the sailors, as many work in the sea, stood afar off and cried, seeing the smoke of a burning, saying, what other is like the great city? And again, city and nation are synonymous sometimes in the Bible, like Rome, like Nineveh, like Babylon. And they threw the dust on their head. Well, I think I'll stop there. I'll stop there for now. And I want to go down to Isaiah 14 now. Because I want to talk about why. Why is Yahweh so angry? And what? Why is this demise of Babylon so wicked? Because like I said, there's wonderful people that are in America. America traditionally has been some of the most giving, caring people in the world. Bibles that have went around the world. Missionaries that have went around the world. Help. That go around the world. So it's not the people that are so evil, although today there's a lot more people evil than there were in times past. It's not the beautiful mountains of Colorado, you know, or these other places. But what it is that Yahweh allowed Babylon to be created, just like he allowed Nebuchadnezzar in ancient times to be his servant for a purpose to ancient Israel, to allow the freedom to come to America so that the printing press came and the good news can go out. And the religious persecution that started in the days of Yeshua and went all the way out through the congregation of wilderness wouldn't be there at that time. That during the Philadelphia era of the congregation that they could freely go out and really finish the job that Yahweh wanted them to do at that time. But then Satan took advantage of this also. And Satan used this trading system of Babylon and he used it to his own advantage. If we go to chapter 14 here, it says, for Yahweh will have pity on Jacob and will yet choose among Israel and will set them in their own land and the foreigner will be joined to them and they shall cling to the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them and bring them to their own place. And the house of Israel will possess them in the land of Yahweh for slaves and slave girls. And they shall be captives of their captors and they shall rule over their oppressors. And it will be in the day that Yahweh shall give you rest from your sorrow and from your trouble and from the hard bondage which was pressed on you. You shall lift up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how the oppressor, the gold gatherer, has ceased. Yahweh has broken the rod of the wicked, the staff of rulers, who struck the people in wrath and blowing and turning away, ruling the nations in anger, dealing out persecution without restraint. All the earth is at rest, quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice over you. The cedars of Lebanon say, since you have lain down, no woodcutter will come up against us. So when Babylon falls, is the earth mourning? No, they're celebrating. Because they're looking at Babylon as the core of all their problems, right? Global warming. You know, hey, it's America's fault. They're the ones that are not doing this. So when we see this, when we see that Babylon's going to fall in the war that's coming, there's not going to be great mourning on the earth, because we talked about this before. I'll get into it here shortly, that Satan is going to rise up. And he's going to take his earthly kingdom that Yahweh will allow for 42 months. And all the wicked people that are left on the earth will be happy. So there's not great mourning when Babylon's falling. There's great joy because of what they're doing. And I said this many times. There's nothing wrong with capitalism. Nothing wrong with people working hard and making a profit. And when you look at the rich people of the world today, you look at the World Bank and the Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Fund, they have all the money that you couldn't use in 1,000 lifetimes. So why do they have to oppress the suffering people of Africa and Asia? Why do they need to suppress people? Why do they need to put fertilizers and chemicals that kill people in their food? Why do they need to do these evil things? Because they're evil. Because they're evil. Because it's a demonic system that is running them. It's not just money. But it's a demonic system that they've given themselves over to Satan. And that's why Yahweh is so hateful toward it. Because it hurts so many people. And Babylon has hurt so many people. Revelation 13, just to prove this point of the world not being upset when the beast power comes and Babylon falls, but they're happy. Revelation 13, in verse 4. And they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with it? And the mouth speaking great things and blasphemies was given to it, and authority was given it to act for 42 months. So we know from Revelation 17 that Babylon rides the beast, Babylon controls the beast, but the beast hates her, the beast throws off Babylon and destroys her, and now all the earth is not complaining to the beast for destroying Babylon, they're praising her. Verse 6, and it opened its mouth in blasphemy toward Yahweh, this beast, to blaspheme his name and his dwelling place and those dwelling in heaven. And it was given to it to make war with the saints and overcome them. And authority was given over every tribe and kindred and tongue and nation. And all those dwelling on the earth will worship him, the beast. Those of whom the names had not been written in the book of life of the Lamb, having been slain from the foundation of the world. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. Anyone gathers captivity, into captivity he goes. If anyone will kill by a sword he must be killed. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. What does he mean by this? It means you reap what you sow. So if you're not preparing, you're gathering into captivity. If you're just living your life there and going every day and loving the system, and you're not making any preparation, then you're going to go into the captivity when Babylon falls. If you're one of those who are going to stock up your guns and fight the government, he who picks up the sword will be killed with the sword. So let me tell you something, especially for our brethren that are there that I love dearly. There is no escape that stay in Babylon. You're not going to fight your way out. There is no place of protection there. The Bible doesn't talk about it. It clearly says, and we'll read a scripture or two here in a moment, that there won't be one person left. So you have to at least make an exit plan. That plan may not happen for months or years, who knows? But you have to at least be thinking about it. You have to detach your heart from this wicked, evil system in place that Yahweh abhors and hates because of what it's doing to people all over the world. Back to Isaiah 14. Back to Isaiah 14. Kind of interesting chapter here. I'm going to start in verse 9. We read the first 8. It said, Sheol from below is stirred for you to meet you at your coming. It stirs up the departed spirits to you, all the leaders of the people of the earth. It has raised the kings of the nations from their thrones. All of them shall answer and say, are you also made as weak as we? Are you likened to us? This is when Babylon's falling. Your majesty is lowered into Sheol, the noise of your harps. The maggot is spread over you, yea, the worm covers you. O Lucifer, son of the morning, how have you fallen from the heavens? You weakening the nations, you cut down to the ground. For you have said in your heart, I will go up to heaven, I will raise my throne above the throne of El, and I will sit in the mountain of appointment in the sides of the north. I will rise over the heights of the cloud, I will be compared to Elyon, the Most High El. Wow. So this is pretty heavy. This is causing it. Satan being the king of Babylon, so to speak, that it talks about here. And what is he talking about? Satan going up to heaven, coming in the sides of the north. We see it in Revelation 12. That again, at Babylon's fall, you know, Satan had a plan of his new world order of all nations working together, right? Like George Bush talked about in 1991, they were all working together in harmony and peace. And where has that gotten them? Here we are 20-something years later, And actually, from 1945, almost 70 years later, where is this one world government? Where is this utopia? We're about as far as from it now as we ever were in the history of man. And that's why Satan has to intervene. He's not going to leave it up anymore to George Bush or America or anybody else on this earth for that matter. He's got to come down himself. Yahweh will allow him 42 months. We read about it in Revelation 13. So he is going to come down and take the reins for himself. In Revelation 12, in verse 7, And war occurred in heaven, Michael and his cherubs making war against the dragon, and the dragon and his cherubs made war. But they did not have strength, nor was yet place for them found in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, the old serpent, being called the devil and Satan. He, deceiving the whole inhabitable world, was cast into the earth, and his cherubs were cast out with him. And I heard a great voice in heaven which said, Now has come the salvation, and the power and the kingdom of our Elohim, and the dominion of his Messiah, because the accuser of our brethren is cast out, the one who accuses them day and night before our Elohim. And they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of their testimony, and they did not love their soul even to death. How do we feel? Are we protecting or are we sacrificing? The life of a believer is every day giving up our pride, our selfishness, our physical possessions until the point you have nothing else to give up but your physical life itself. They love not their soul even to death. Because of this, be glad, the heavens and those dwelling in them. Woe to the ones dwelling on the earth and in the sea, because the devil came down to you having great anger, knowing that his time is short. And like we said last week when we were going over Jacob's trouble, what does he do? His time is short. He's coming after the true believers. He's coming after Israel. To the rest of the world, they're praising him, worshiping him. They're going to take his mark. You know, the 1,000 points of light is here. He's their Messiah. But to us, we know he's the anti-Messiah. It's very clear what's coming. Very, very clear what's coming. Daniel 8, we say the same thing. Talks about this. Daniel 8 and verse 7. This war in heaven and Satan's coming to earth. Again, the prophecy here of this ram that has two horns, one higher than the next, and then the he-goat that comes against it. I'm not going to read the whole chapter. I'm going to start in verse 7. And I saw him touch beside the ram, and he was moved with anger against him. And he struck the ram and shattered his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him. But he threw him down to the ground and trampled him, and no one could deliver the ram from his hand. Then the he-goat became very great, and when he was mighty, the great horn was shattered. So you have this ram with two horns, one higher than the other. You have the he-goat that's coming at him, and then he has a mighty horn in the middle. Interesting enough, what does it say about the he-goat? That he comes across without touching the ground. Verse 5, And I was considering, and behold, a male of the goats came from the west over the face of all the earth and did not touch the ground, and the he-goat had an outstanding horn between his eyes. And clearly we could see this is how the American power has been used. It's been used in air assaults. It's not a military offensive with ground troops, like they say, boots on the ground, millions coming in. It's all been done with shock and awe, with great air assault. And then verse 10. Well, read verse 9 first. And out of one of them, so he comes and hits, and this is again, Greece, the second of this beast is Medo-Persia, the Russians and the Iranians. So the Russians and the Iranians are fighting against Babylon. They're hitting head on. And then who comes in? Greece comes in, or EU comes in, to fight to their defense. And there really is no winner in this. And this is when Satan comes to the earth. He sees his whole plan is in disarray, and that's what it says in verse 9. Out of one of them, there's four horns, four notable ones from the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came a little horn, which became very great toward the south and toward the east and toward the bountiful land, Israel. And it became great even to the host of heaven. So now we're seeing what we just read about in Revelation 12. And it caused some of the host of the stars to fall to the ground and trample them. Didn't we just read about that? There's war in heaven with Michael and Satan, and there's war, and some of the angels, who are called stars in Scripture, fall to the ground. So it's the same story that we're reading here. Yea, he, this little horn, Satan, magnified himself even to the leader of the host. Didn't we read that in Isaiah 14? That Satan went up to heaven and tried to overtake the throne of Yahweh? And the continual sacrifice was taken away by him, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. We know that the daily sacrifice never stopped, but the daily sacrifice is Yeshua's grace to this earth. Yahweh's word says, it rains on the just and the unjust. And we know from Hebrews 10:14 that Yeshua's grace, it's a perpetual thing. And what that does is, by his grace being throughout the earth every day, it gives people the opportunity for repentance. If his grace wasn't here, then you couldn't go out and get somebody to repent, because they'd already be under the judgment of their sins. But at this point, and this is about the scariest point that we will ever hit in our lifetime, is going to be when Yahweh's grace is taken away from the earth. Because when Satan now is king of the earth, and all the people are praising him and taking his mark, Yahweh's not going to blaspheme Yeshua's sacrifice. And that's why it talks about in Hebrews 6, once you fall away from the truth, it's impossible to come back, because you're putting the Son of Elohim back on the torture stake again. So again, he takes away the continual sacrifice, Yeshua's grace, and a massive army was given against the continual sacrifice because of sin. So sin is the reason why this is happening, and it threw the truth to the ground, and it worked and pushed forward. Then I heard a certain holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that one who spoke. Here we again see the duality of Yahweh. Until when is the vision, the continual sacrifice, and the devastating rebellious revolt? Do you remember in 2 Thessalonians? What did Paul write? That the end will not come unless there's a great falling away, and literally in the Aramaic and even in the Greek, it means a great rebellion. This is what he's talking about here. I heard a certain one saying, until when is the vision, the continual sacrifice, and the devastating rebellion to revolt, to give both the sanctuary and the massive crowd to be trampled? Who is the sanctuary? Here we are, all true believers. And he said to me, for 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary will be made righteous. That's 1,150 days, because you have an evening and a morning. So divide 2,300 by 2. And literally that comes to about 3 years and 2 to 3 months, depending on if you have your intercalary year coming in there. Almost the exact time of the beast's reign. Almost the exact time. There's an overlapping of maybe a couple of months. There might be a reason for that, if we were getting into the two witnesses, because warning always comes before judgment. And he said to me, for 2,300 evening and morning, then the sanctuary will be made righteous. So clearly all three of these, Isaiah 14, Revelation 12, Daniel 8, they all tie into the same story. They're all talking about that sin is so wicked in the world. Like the days of Noah, violence filled the earth. Like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, sodomites everywhere being accounted as normal behavior. That Yahweh had enough, he allows Satan to come to this earth after his rebellion of trying to come to heaven. He tells him, okay, you've got 42 months. Satan comes down. The world is loving it. They have their own, you know. But to the people of Yahweh and to the nation here, it's the time of Jacob's trouble. Back to Isaiah 14. Starting in verse 19, but you were thrown from your grave like a despised branch, like the covering of the slain, those pierced by the sword, those who go down into the stone of the pit, like a dead body trampled underfoot. You shall not be united with them in burial, because you ruined your land, you have slain your people. The seed of evildoers shall never be named. Prepare for the slaughter of his sons, for the iniquity of their fathers, that they may not rise and possess the land and fill the face of the earth with cities. For I will rise against them, says Yahweh of hosts, and I will cut off the name and the remnant, the son and the grandson from Babylon, declares Yahweh. And I will also make it a possession of the hedgehog, the pools of water, and I will sweep it with the broom of room, says Yahweh of hosts. Yahweh of hosts has sworn, saying, surely I have thought, so it will be, and I have purposed, it shall rise up. So again, showing Yahweh is not very happy when these things are coming to the earth, and it really is the catalyst of the end time. Well, what is the thing that pretty much precedes this? Psalm 83. Psalm 83, I think, is the thing that will precede and abut to the demise of Babylon, because it's the war where they come against Israel, the nations. Psalm 83. O Elohim, do not keep silent to yourself. Do not be speechless. Lay, do not be still, O El. For lo, your enemies are roaring. For those who hate you have lifted up your head, their head. They take shrewd counsel against your people. They plot against your hidden ones. They have said, come and we will cut them off from being a nation, and that the name of Israel will not be recalled again. For they conspire together with one heart. They have cut a covenant against you. Even the tents of Edom and the Ishmaelites, Moab and the Hagarites, Gebel and Ammon and Amalek, Philistia and those living in Tyre. Also Assyria has joined with them. They were in arm to the sons of Lot, Selah. So we see that here's the next war coming in the Middle East, at least the next big war. I don't know what other small things might happen, but the big one is the Psalm 83. This is the thing that I believe that wittingly or unwittingly, and I think it's wittingly, that President Obama is setting up that Israel will not be able to defend themselves. I mean, clearly you can see how he's supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, that even their own country, Egypt, says they're a terrorist group and outlawed them. And America is supporting them, not only in Egypt, but also in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon and other places, including Libya. They've been supporting them. They've allowed the situation to happen here where now you have a corridor for Al-Qaeda coming from Syria going to Iraq. Some of the major cities like Fallujah in Iraq have been taken back by Al-Qaeda. And you have really a mess here in the Middle East. I'm telling you, it is not going to get better anytime soon. And when war breaks out, look out. I mean, look what's happening in Egypt. Look what's happening in Syria. Look what was happening for years in Iraq. I mean, the same thing will happen here. It's going to be the same thing. These people are animals, you know. And America has set up the situation, causing it. They're forcing Israel into situations. And again, we're going to see in the next couple of months what's going to become of this recent scheme that John Kerry and the American government has put together to force Israel into a peace that's going to destroy them. Why? Why so much are they forcing Israel into this when not only isn't there a peace partner on the other side, there's not even a legitimate leader. You know, Mahmoud Abbas is 6 years without running for office. He's a dictator by every means of the imagination. The people are against him. They're ready to hang the guy up. Hamas doesn't recognize him. Half of the people of the Palestinians that live in Gaza. So why? Why force this issue? Why force Israel to become undefensible in their borders? For one reason, because the plan is to destroy them. There's no other logical answer that can come with it. The other thing that's interesting, when you look at Psalm 83, all of these nations are part of the former Ottoman Empire. They're all part of the former Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was what? They were the last government. They controlled the Middle East from 1517 to 1917. And they had the last caliphate. The last religious leader was part of the Ottoman Empire. How did the Muslim Brotherhood start? It started in 1926 after the Ottoman Empire fell. And what was the reason the Muslim Brotherhood started? To bring back the caliphate. To bring back the religious Islamic rule to the Middle East. So this is what you're looking at. And just yesterday I read an article. Because Turkey and Iran have not been so close in recent times. Turkey and Iran signed an economic and military pact yesterday to work together toward making one big superpower here in the Middle East. And that's what Erdogan always wanted from day one. He is a very staunch religious Muslim, and he said it with his own mouth. He wants to bring back the caliphate. He wants to bring back the Ottoman Empire. And we know, if we look at some of these prophecies for Esau against his brother Jacob in the end time, we know that the Edomites traveled up there. And the main tribe of Edom is Teman, and those are the, where Ottoman comes from. O Teman comes from the Ottoman. That's the main tribe of Turkey, or the Ottomans, that are the descendants of Esau. So, I mean, we're coming full circle in all of this, and it's happening quickly. Jeremiah 25. Why do I feel a little urgent with this? Not only what we see happening on the ground, but not only do we see as we're sitting here in the peaceful calm before the storm, right here in Galilee, Israel, but because Yahweh's word clearly says, starting in verse 11, "And this whole land shall be a waste and a horror, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. So Yahweh says he's going to use Babylon in the end time. And he's going to allow Babylon to rule the nations for 70 years. And it really has happened. You know, up to this point, you think the Arabs have love lost to America? Of course not. But there's nothing they can do. Because when Yahweh gives somebody the ability to rule, there's nothing you're going to do against it. And that's why America has been able to win these wars, fight in these decisions, and overcome, because Yahweh's given the ability. But look what it says. "And these nations will serve for 70 years. And when it shall be, when 70 years are fulfilled, I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation and the land of the Chaldeans for their iniquity, says Yahweh, and I will make it everlasting ruins." So Babylon is given only 70 years to rule the nations. When does the 70 years start? That's the $99,000 question. Logically, it seems like it would start when they were given the power at the end of World War II, when Eisenhower and Khrushchev divided up Europe. Could it possibly be from 1948 when Israel became a nation? We don't know. It really doesn't tell, because it was a prophecy for the future, but we're living it, so we can certainly guess. And one way or another, however you guess, the same is with Israel. We're late in the game. You know, these things started, the end time clearly started with World War II and all the things that happened. There's no doubt about that. We have all the proof. So we're not in the beginning of the game. This generation will not pass till all these things come to be. And here we are, late in that generation. So somewhere in these next few years, the clock is ticking on Babylon. Now, like I said, I'm preaching this 15 years. And look what's happened just in the last 5 or 6 years since President Obama has taken office. Look what's happened to the military. Look what's happened with the dissension within the country. Look what's happened to the debt. So, I mean, they're hanging by a string, and there's never been a time where more Americans, not for religious reasons, but more Americans see no future for their country. Can you imagine? In Great Babylon, in the richest nation of the earth, they don't see a future for their country coming. If you go down to verse 29, "For behold, I will bring evil on this city which is called by my name, and shall you be found entirely without guilt?" So he's saying all the people that will be punished when this happens, Jerusalem will be punished, all the nations that are around here are going to be punished, all the nations around the Middle East are going to be punished because they're coming against Israel. Israel's being punished because they're allowing it. Babylon's being punished because they're the ones who set it up. But then in verse 29, he says, "For I will call for a sword on those living in the earth, says Yahweh of hosts. And now you prophesy against them all these words, and say to them, Yahweh will roar on high and give his voice from his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar over his dwelling place. He answers with a shout those who tread out the grapes against all those living on the earth. A roaring will go to the ends of the earth, and Yahweh's controversy with the nations. He will enter into judgment with all flesh. He will give the wicked to the sword, says Yahweh." Verse 33. "And the slain of Yahweh will be in that day from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth." So clearly this is the day of Yahweh. There's no other time that this has ever happened. It's something that is coming and coming very shortly. Jeremiah 51. Jeremiah 51 tells us a little bit what happens to America Babylon at that point. Verse 34. Jeremiah 51, verse 34. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has devoured us. He has crushed us. He has made us an empty vessel. He has swallowed us like a jackal. He has filled his belly with delicacies. He has thrown me out. The violence done to me and my flesh is on Babylon, the one saying in Zion will say. In Jerusalem will say, my blood will be on those living in Chaldea. So here it is. Israel is blaming Babylon for their destruction. So clearly they're not the same entity, which of course they're not. So Yahweh says this, behold, I will strive for you and take vengeance for you, and I will dry up her sea and make her wydrow. And Babylon shall become heaps, a home of jackals, a horror and a hissing, without even one inhabitant. Drop down to verse 43. Her cities have become a ruin, a dry land and a wilderness, a land in which no man dwells, nor does any son of man pass by. I will punish Bel, that's a false deity, in Babylon, and I will bring forth out of his mouth that which he has swallowed up. And the nations shall flow together, the nations will not flow together any more to him. Yea, the wall of Babylon shall fall. Another characteristic, that all the nations assemble in Babylon, United Nations. No other place on earth you have that. So what does he say when all this destruction is happening? Verse 45. My people go out of her midst and deliver each man his soul from the burning anger of Yahweh. And that your heart not faint, and you fear the report that shall be heard in the land. The report shall come in a year, and after that the report will come in another year, and there will be violence in the land, governor against governor. So behold, the days come that I will punish on the idols of Babylon, and all her land will be put to shame, and all her slain shall fall in the midst. Then the heavens and the earth and all that is in them shall shout for Babylon, for the plunderers shall come to her from the north, says Yahweh. As Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel, so for Babylon the slain of all the earth shall fall. So very clearly we saw it. It's a chain reaction. Because Babylon is setting this up to destroy Yahweh's plan, to cause Israel to divide the land, when in the end time Yahweh is restoring the land, what does he say? He's going to judge Babylon for being the perpetrator in putting this together. He's going to judge Jerusalem for allowing it, and he's going to judge all the other nations for doing it. Babylon is to fall for the slain of Israel, so for Babylon the slain of all the earth shall fall. You who have escaped the sword, go away, do not stand still. Remember Yahweh afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. People ask many times, where do we go? What can we do? Anywhere. Anywhere but Babylon. Get out. Move. You know? You're not going to transplant yourself in a new place. You're getting out of the destructive hand that's coming to destroy the place. And then it says, be patient. The end result is coming back to Israel. Because when Babylon falls, and when the war comes over here, there will be a time where the door will open, where believers will start coming back to the land. So he says, you who have escaped the sword, go away, do not stand still. Remember Yahweh afar off, and let Jerusalem come into your mind. So this is what's coming down the pike here. Babylon is being destroyed because they allowed the destruction to Israel. Jeremiah 30, because Yahweh, like we said, Yahweh will redeem all the tribes. He will be calling back. There is going to be a second regathering in these end times. The first happened after the Holocaust in World War II. In Jeremiah 30, he says, the word that came to Jeremiah from Yahweh saying, so speaks Yahweh Elohim of Israel. Write for yourself all the words that I have spoken to you in a book. For lo, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will turn the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, says Yahweh. And I will cause them to return to the land that I gave their fathers, and they will possess it. Verse 17. For I will give health back to you, and I will heal you of your wounds, says Yahweh, because they called you outcast, saying, this is Zion, no one is seeking for her. So says Yahweh, behold, I will turn the captivity of Jacob's tents, and I will have mercy on his dwelling places. And the city will be built on her tell. That's literally the word that's used there. Her tell heap, and the palace shall remain on its own divine place. So we see there is hope in the end. Verse 23. Behold, the tempest of Yahweh fury goes forth, a sweeping whirlwind. It shall whirl on the head of the wicked. The glow of the anger of Yahweh will not turn back until he has executed, until he has established the purposes of his heart. In the latter days, you will understand it. So clearly, this is a latter day prophecy of Yahweh's redemption. If we go back to Jeremiah 50, like we said, the whole chapter is about end time Babylon. Another interesting thing he says about the tribes in the end time here, Jeremiah 50 and verse 3. For a nation comes up against her from the north, Babylon, which shall make her land a desert. Yea, no one shall dwell in it. They shall flee, they shall go, both man and animal. In these days and at that time, so again, this is why we know, again, it's end time. It's a Jewish idiom for the last days. This is not something that happened in ancient times. There's never been a time in ancient times where Babylon was destroyed by Medo-Persia. It just never happened. A matter of fact, there's not a time where Jews are fleeing. Matter of fact, when Cyrus the king allowed the Jews to come back to Israel in 538 after the 70 years of punishment, 90% of the Jews stayed in Babylon. They had good lives there. They were taken care of. There is nothing in history that ever says that the Persian kings or Nebuchadnezzar slaughtered all these Jews and flee Babylon for your life. You don't see it. So clearly this is end time. In these days and at that time, end time, the sons of Israel will come, declares Yahweh. They and the sons of Judah together, going and weeping, they will go and seek Yahweh, their Elohim. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces pointing there, saying, come and let us join ourselves to Yahweh in an everlasting covenant, never to be forgotten. So here we see what? We see that there's many Jews and Israelites living in Babylon. And they're fleeing Babylon, coming back to the land. Now, interesting enough, as far as Jews, there's as many Jews living in America, just about, as there are in the land of Israel. It was always more in America. Only in the last couple of years, as Israel maybe just gone over the top, that there's more now in Israel than there are in the U.S. But it's just about equal. As many in the whole nation of Israel that live still in Babylon. Also Israelites. There's probably 100 million Israelites that are U.S. citizens. So here he's saying in the end time, whoever end time Babylon is, all of these Israelites and Jews are fleeing there. There's no other country on earth that has nearly as many Jews or Israelites living in it than the United States. And where are they coming back to Zion? My people lost sheep, their shepherds have caused them to go astray. How true is that in Babylon? They turned them away on the mountains, they have gone from mountain to hill, they have forgotten their resting place. We said this, they've given up the Shabbat, their day of rest. All who have found them have devoured them, and their foes have said, we are not guilty because they sinned against Yahweh, the habitation of righteousness in Yahweh, their father's hope. Flee from the midst of Babylon, go out of the land of the Chaldeans, and be as the he-goats before the flock. We drop down to verse 17. Israel is a scattered sheep, driven away by lions. First, the king of Assyria devoured him. And last, the king Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon crunched his bones. So Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, says this, behold, I am punishing the king of Babylon and his land as I have punished the king of Assyria. And I will again bring Israel to his home, and he will feed on Carmel and Bashan, and his soul will be satisfied on Mount Ephraim and Gilead. In those days and at that time, so this is end time, states Yahweh, the iniquity of Israel will be sought for, and it is not, and the sins of Judah, and they will not be found. For I will pardon those whom I leave as a remnant, the new covenant. In that day they will call me Elohim, and they will be my people, and he will remember their sins no more. Verse 23, how the hammer of the earth is cut off and broken, how Babylon has become a ruin among the nations. Again, that word literally means one who pounds. That Babylon was the world policeman. They were pounding all the other nations. And now the earth is amazed because Babylon is no more. They were a ruin among the nations. Verse 26, come against her from the end. Open her granaries. Pile up as heaps and utterly destroy her. Do not let a remnant be left. So there will be no remnant that's left there. Drop down to verse 35. A sword is on the Chaldeans, states Yahweh, and on those living in Babylon, and on her rulers, and on her wise men. A sword is on the liars, and they shall become fools. A sword is on her mighty men, and they will be broken. A sword is on his horses and his chariots, and to all the mixed people in her midst. Babylon is a great melting pot. And they shall become as woman, a sword is to her treasuries, and they shall be robbed. A drought is on her waters, and they shall be dried up, for it is the land of idols, and they boast themselves in idols. And it's very interesting that, I don't know if you've seen this in the news, but in California, they are having the worst drought they ever had in history. And they're saying they don't know what to do because the water is down, like here in Israel, you know the Sea of Galilee, the water gets down 15 feet, and that's pretty bad. The water there is down, and the West Coast, 130 feet. You know, when you think, because America is much bigger than Israel, how much water they're using. And they've had a drought, I think now, they said for the last 13 years or something. But it's such a bad situation with the drought there. They're saying now it's really to the point. And that's something that Babylon was always blessed with. That it had all freshwater places, whether the Mississippi River, the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Great Lakes. And now we're seeing that these things are coming. A drought is on our waters, and they will be dried up. Verse 39, so the beasts of the desert shall dwell there with jackals, and the daughters of the hostage will dwell in her again. And it shall not again have anyone in it forever. It shall not be lived in from generation to generation. As Elohim overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and their neighbors, states Yahweh, so no man will live there, nor a son of man stay in it. And I know a lot of people that will hear this have been with us here in Israel. If you haven't, we go to Sodom and Gomorrah, and I can tell you firsthand, anybody that's been there, no one's living there. Nobody's been living there since Lot, and nobody's going to be living there at any time in the near future. Behold, a people will come from the north, and a great nation, and many kings will be stirred up from the furthest places of the earth. They will lay hold of a bow and a javelin. They shall be cruel and will show no mercy. Their voice will roar from the sea and arrayed like a man for battle. They shall ride on horses against you, O daughter of Babylon. The king of Babylon has heard their report, and his hands became limp. Anguish took hold of him, pangs like a woman giving birth. So we clearly see here what's coming. Zechariah 2. Zechariah, the second chapter. Shortly. In verse 6. Zechariah 2 and verse 6. Woe, woe, flee from the land of the north, says Yahweh, for I have scattered you as the four winds of the heavens, declare Yahweh. Woe, O Zion, escape, you who live with the daughter of Babylon. Why is it daughter? Because it's mystery Babylon. It's not Babylon, Iraq. It has the same characteristics, and it's mystery end time Babylon. It's the daughter of Babylon. For so says Yahweh of hosts, he has sent me after glory to the nations who plundered you. For he who touches you touches the pupil of his eye. For behold, I will shake my hand over them, and they shall be a prize for their servants. And you will know that Yahweh has sent me. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion. For lo, I come, and I will dwell among you, says Yahweh. And many nations will be joined to Yahweh in that day, and they shall be my people, and I will dwell among you. And you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you. And Yahweh shall possess Judah, his portion, in the Holy Land. And he shall again choose Jerusalem. Be silent, all flesh, before Yahweh, for he is raised out of his holy habitation. So clearly the end time of Yahweh intervening, saving the tents of Judah. We know that when they come to faith in Yeshua, and bringing the people back to the land. Isaiah 11. It's like we said, two times his hand will go out in these end times to gather the remnant. Isaiah 11 talks about the second time of that regathering. Starting verse 5. In righteousness shall be the encircler of his loins, and faithfulness the encircler and right of his loins. And the wolf will live with the lamb, and the leopard will lie with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little boy will lead them. The cow and the bear will feed, their young shall lie together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. And the infant will play on the hole of the asp, yea, the weaned child shall put his hand on the viper's den. They shall not do evil nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the water covers the sea. And it shall be in that day the root of Jesse stands as a banner, see the same thing, of his people. Nations shall seek to him, and his resting place will be glorious. And it will be in that day Yahweh will again set his hand the second time to recover the remnant of his people that remains. Like we said, the first time was after World War II, after the Holocaust. Now the second time is coming. They're from Assyria, from Egypt, from Patros, from Ethiopia, from Elam, from Shinar, from Hamath, and from the coast of the sea. He will lift up a banner for the nations, and he will gather the outcasts of Israel and gather those dispersed from Judah from the four winds of the earth. Remember, they're fleeing when Satan comes down, and Yahweh's gathering them back. And the envy of Ephraim will turn off, and Judah's foes will be cut off. Ephraim will not envy Judah, and Judah will not trouble Ephraim. So it's not going to be in that day where we have this problem we have today, where we're not recognized by our brother. But they will fly on their shoulder on the Philistines to the west. Together they will plunder the sons of the east, the stretching of the hand on Edom and Moab and the sons of Ammon. They will obey them. And Yahweh will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt with the scorching wind. He will wave his hand over the river and strike it into seven torrents and make one tread it with shoes. So where before Yahweh separated the sea just on two parts, now it's going to be into seven parts, maybe because of so many people that are coming. And there will be a highway for the remnant of his people, those left from Assyria, as it was to Israel in the day when they came up out of the land of Egypt. So many, many people from the east that will be coming when the Red Sea is once again parted. And in that day you shall say, O Yahweh, I will thank you. Though you were angry with me, turn away your anger and you shall comfort me. Behold, El is Yeshua. I will trust and not be afraid, for my strength and my song is Yahweh. Yea, he has become to me Yeshua. And he will draw waters out of the wells of salvation with joy. And in that day you will say, praise Yahweh. Call on his name. Declare his doings among the people. Make mention that his name is exalted. Sing to Yahweh, for he has done majestically. This is known in all the earth. Cry and shout, O dweller in Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in your midst. And that comes, that chapter is right before the burden of Babylon, which we read. So again, I say this is a message to me of encouragement, not of condemnation. It's a message that shows that Babylon's time to this earth of ruling is coming to an end. That's something that the earth rejoices because of what Babylon has done to the earth. And I think it's something that Yahweh's people should rejoice. Working on this book, I mentioned to some of you before, what has really inspired me is that when you look at these people that were 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 years, and even really more than that, even going back, how they suffered so much. They suffered persecution. They suffered confiscation of property and things. They suffered martyrism, the killing of their children. They suffered so many things. And yet, in all accounts, they took it joyfully. Because they would boldly say, when they said, join the Catholic Church or else. And they would say, there's nothing you can take from me but my body, which I'm trying to lose every day of my life. But my soul belongs to Yahweh. Only he can do that. So to them, mortarism wasn't a horrible thing. They were going to sleep in the grave and their next waking moment, they'd be in this kingdom. And that's the point. As we're getting closer now, as we're past, you know, that sunset almost, and the twilight is coming, and the kingdom is coming so close. Where is our mind? Is our mind in the kingdom of Yahweh? Do we read that Bible every day? Are we so excited when we read these scriptures of his kingdom? And our whole journey, our whole thought, our whole focus is just bearing fruit for the kingdom, trying to get those last few people out there that Yahweh may be trying to call. Or is our mind just endlessly in the vicious cycle of Babylon? Is it more concerned about unconverted relatives, houses, jobs, money, and anything else that goes along with it? But it's so sad for me. It's so sad for me to see so many people getting lost in this vicious and worthless cycle of Babylon. You know, and again, for the ones that are there, that are stuck there at this point, I earnestly say, start making a plan. At least get a plan, get yourself some hope, and start living for the kingdom. Start doing more ministry. Stop working around the clock. Because all these people, you know, and many of them I've known 15 years ago that said the same thing. How could we ever leave? We don't have the money. So they stayed in Babylon. They're still working day and night. And 15 years later, they're still in the same spot. And I say, you know what? It takes something to be rich, but you can be poor anywhere. You don't need a license. You can be poor anywhere. You could just as well be poor in the Philippines as you can be in Babylon. You know? So if it was even getting somewhere, if it was, well, you know what, Don? I know I got to get out of here. I'm going to work for the next couple of years. I'm going to save money, and then I'm going to get out. But it never works that way. It's just month goes into month, year goes into year, and they never get ahead. Because Babylon has made slaves of the souls of men. And just like Yahweh says in Haggai, you put your money into a bag that has holes, and it goes out. So the time is short, and any of us can die today. This is the time to start working for the kingdom. Because once you close your eyes and you sleep in the ground or Yeshua returns, there is no more at that point. There is no more, oh, Master, give me one more day. Give me one more month. I'll help you then. I'll show you then. It's like, no. That's panic talking. That's the guy that's before the judge after he's caught, after he's going to prison, pleading for his life. Now is the time. Now is the time when we don't have shackles on our hands. Now is the time when we have freedom to make decisions. Now is the time to show Yahweh we want to live for that kingdom today, not tomorrow. And you know what? If Babylon doesn't fall for another 20 years, it doesn't make a difference to me because I'm out of Babylon. And I don't mean just physically leaving the land. My mind is out of Babylon. I'm out of the system. It has nothing to do with me. My life is focused on the kingdom of Yahweh. And every one of us has to get that way. You know, we all should be involved in the Matthew 24 project. We all should be involved every day of our life with personal ministry, trying to bring the good news out there somewhere. We can't let the cares of life, the thorns and the thistles, weigh us down, or we're going to risk losing it. You know, because this is it now. Remember that parable? It's scary. Matthew 22. The king says, my supper is ready. Send out the invitations. And I'm telling you, they're already in the mail. And one said, I need to go to my field. One said, I got married. One said this. And what did he say? He said, go out on the highways and the byways, and you make sure my house is filled. But to those people that didn't want my invitation, not one of them will come to that wedding supper. So now's the time. The invitations are out. Make the decision before it's too late. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.